What a beautiful day in the Summit City. It is a Thursday. Taking you home, the Sports Rush. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. Big show on the way. We're going to have Kevin Bowen joining us later this hour. Of course, we'll talk Colts football. Colts have a big one coming up on Sunday. You may not think Houston is a big game, but the Colts cannot afford to have any kind of a snoozer. They have to win every winnable game, which includes Jacksonville and Houston coming up this Sunday. They also have to find a way to win 2 out of 3 against a pretty tough stretch where you've got New England, Arizona, and the Raiders. That's what's left for the Colts. We'll talk about the odds for the Colts and what Kevin Bowen thinks they need to accomplish to make the playoffs when we talk to him coming up 30 minutes from now. Also in hour number two, Notre Dame has their guy. Dylan Sin will tell us not only what he thinks about the hire, but where the Irish go from here. Dylan Sin, 520, and then Eric Dutkevich from Parkview Sports Medicine will be filling in for Tommy Shegler today. We'll talk a little bit of everything with Dute. Of course, you heard Dute all fall during the pregame show for high school football, the Parkview Sports Medicine tailgate pregame show, where he joined Jim Shevlin and Shannon Griffith and did a fantastic job in his debut performance on Friday nights, previewing games for our area. And so he will also be joining us as part of our postgame show and adding some insights as to the results that we get on our scoreboard show, which is presented by Parkview Sports Medicine. And it starts tomorrow because we've got Carroll Homestead as our featured game coming up tomorrow night. So Caleb and I will be at the Coventry Pizza Hut after the game. You can join us, have some pizza, wings. Maybe you want the chicken Alfredo pasta, which is fast becoming one of my favorites from Pizza Hut as well. We'll be there from about 9 to 10 o'clock, a special time tomorrow, because we want to get to Purdue basketball, at least for the second half after we finish our high school coverage. We'll have Purdue basketball starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow night, right after the Parkview Sports Medicine high school basketball postgame show. And, of course, high school basketball all season long being presented by Indiana Physical Therapy. So Notre Dame has their man. This seems, the more I think about it, to be such a logical choice. Maybe Marcus Freeman isn't ready to become a head coach, but this is such a unique situation that you have at Notre Dame because you've got a successful program looking to stay successful. What usually happens when you're hiring a coach? Usually, it's a program that has had a down year or two, and you're looking to bounce back. You're looking for someone that can come in, kind of give the program a boost, maybe bring in some higher-level recruits, whatever the situation. You look at like USC, Lincoln Riley brings in his offense, brings in some of the recruits that he's had success with at Oklahoma.
Hey, he got another one to decommit from OU just now and sign with USC, a five-star running back in the 2022 class. Not that that's a surprise at all,
no,
mind you.
No, that's why you hire the guy, right? Because you consider him a lead recruiter, a guy that's going to be able to sway some of that top talent that's been going to Oklahoma and get them to come out and join you on the West Coast. Quite honestly, I don't know if Brian Kelly is that guy for LSU. I don't think Brian Kelly was the point person for most of the recruits, especially the high-level recruits that Notre Dame has gotten recently. I think Brian Kelly does make an appearance, but I think most of the work is being done by assistants. And if you want to give credit, it's Marcus Freeman, Tommy Reese. Go through the staff. It's not necessarily the relationship that they have with Brian Kelly.
Yeah, that's completely correct. I mean, Kelly would do stuff here and there, but largely, as you mentioned, Reese, Freeman, throw in special teams coordinator, Brian Polian, throw in some of the offensive and defensive line coaches, Mike Mickens, I believe he's the cornerbacks coach, another guy. I mean, those are the guys out on the recruiting trail. In fact, Tommy Reese today tweeting that he was out on the recruiting trail with the private jets. So these are the guys who are more active, and Freeman is an elite recruiter. Brian Kelly is not an elite recruiter.
Right.
And that's,
Freeman can get to have a relationship with these 17-year-olds. Brian Kelly didn't relate to them.
No. Kelly ran the program like a CEO, and he kind of handed off and delegated duties well, and he was a great spokesperson for the program as a head coach, especially these past 5 years during this great run that Notre Dame has had. But as far as the nitty-gritty and recruiting, not really his thing. Solid in-game head coach. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. but recruiting, not a strong suit. And with Marcus Freeman expected to be the next head coach, it's not official, but we all know that it will probably be announced, I would guess, tomorrow, since it has been announced today. It's dependent upon the university signing off, and they have different protocols in place for that. But with Marcus Freeman staying, you take a program that will be able to accelerate forward as opposed to hit a reset button. And I think that is the biggest key here. You keep this recruiting class intact largely. There's been one decommitment so far. It's still ranked in the top five for the class of 22. Signing day is coming up here December 15th. You have all the pieces in place. The one thing Notre Dame could not do under Brian Kelly outside of 2013 when they got Jalen Smith, and then this recruiting class when Marcus Freeman and Tommy Rees were the guys actually out on the trail getting it done, was elite level recruiting. Freeman's the guy who can close that gap. I get that he's not been a head coach, but he can close the gap in recruiting, and that is the one thing that Notre Dame's been lacking to get to that next level and win a national championship.
One of the things that I've been hearing about why Marcus Freeman has not been officially named as the Notre Dame coach, and you kind of alluded to it, Caleb, is that Father Jenkins was in Italy with a scheduled trip, and that Notre Dame's protocols, the official bylaws or whatever, they cannot make a hire for the head coach until he has signed off on it and he has to return from Italy. I think he was due back today from what I understand, but they may just wait until later tonight or tomorrow to make the announcement. It's not official, but it's pretty much official. Every single person that reports on Notre Dame football is reporting that it is Marcus Freeman. You've got players that are somewhat celebratory in the fact that it's the guy they wanted. So, first of all, with a hire like this, you're not hiring someone that's got to come in and do a rebuild. You're not hiring someone that's going to bring a new set of recruits in. And so you don't want to risk losing what you've got. That's why a transition from someone who's already on staff makes a lot of sense. What would happen if you did go out and let's say you hire a Luke Fickell out of Cincinnati? First of all, the players that Luke Fickell is probably recruiting to Cincinnati are probably not the players that Notre Dame would like to recruit into Notre Dame. You probably have a different level of talent. Let's be honest, Notre Dame wants to recruit the guys that are considering Alabama, Oklahoma, USC, Clemson, where Cincinnati is trying to maybe get guys that would have been a mid-level, mid-major program, like a Arkansas, or, you know, and try to steal one away from maybe an SEC school here or there. Just not the same level of talent. And so if you bring in Luke Fickell, you're not going to get a boost on bringing some recruits that will decommit from Cincinnati and then commit to Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman not only can keep the relationships that already exist, especially since hiring Marcus Freeman also assures that you keep Tommy Rees, because we already know Tommy Rees has signed a contract. That's why we know Marcus Freeman's going to be the coach, because the offensive coordinator would not have signed a new contract if you didn't know who the head coach was going to be, because if they were still going to go outside and hire another coach, that coach might want to bring his offensive coordinator on board. And so you don't hire an offensive coordinator unless you know who the coach is, because the coach really is the one responsible to hire the offensive coordinator. That's why after talks that Marcus Freeman had with Jack Swarbrick a couple of days ago, it seems very obvious that it is Marcus Freeman. He is the guy. He's going to be the coach for Notre Dame. And I think it makes a lot of sense given the position that Notre Dame is in. You do not want to take a step backward. You're willing to gamble a little bit on how far this takes you forward when you know what the floor is. I mean, it's kind of like, where's the ceiling, where's the floor, right? I mean, if you hire an outside guy, maybe you feel like that gives you a higher ceiling, but it's going to drop the floor immediately because you would probably lose some of the current talent. You probably would have some decommits among the current recruiting class. You take a guy like Marcus Freeman, you're going to pick up those recruits that you've already got committed to you. You will lose very few of them. In fact, you said, was there one that did decommit? Because
yes.
Because as of the last time I had heard, they had kept every one of them as committed, but maybe they will lose one along the way.
Yeah, they had one player decommit, and that was expected, and that was, I believe, Devin Brown was the name. Devin Moore.
Offense, defense?
He is a safety. But that is the only name so far. And again, he could have just decommitted and waited to see who the head coach that is hired is going to be. I doubt it, but that's the only change we've seen. And for Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman, and you keep Tommy Rees, I don't see this as a... It's definitely not a rebuild, obviously. And it's not really a reload.
It's a transition.
I think of it as a rebranding of Notre Dame football. You know, as Lincoln Riley is kind of the college football offensive wunderkind, Marcus Freeman is the defensive version of that. And so his ability to connect with players, you know, a lot of these same things can be said for Lincoln Riley, because Freeman is the defensive version of Lincoln Riley. And so he connects well with the players. He's a great recruiter, played at Ohio State. He was drafted into the NFL. He's got a lot of Midwest connections, but also it's not just the Midwest where he can get guys. Obviously, Notre Dame has fertile recruiting grounds all over the country. East Coast, California, Florida, Texas, Midwest is going to be an area, but they'll be able to get elite talent out of Ohio, and Freeman's been able to do that. They'll be able to get elite talent on the West Coast, on the East Coast, Florida, all these places, and his ability as an elite recruiter, and you can even throw in Tommy Rees with that because I think he's proven to be pretty solid himself. They have the pieces, and with the assistants all returning, I haven't seen one report of an assistant leaving to join Brian Kelly, right?
Yeah.
That right there astounding.
Tell you?
Yes. If you keep those assistants in place, you have the staff that, while Freeman doesn't have head coach experience, you have the ability to kind of have a team effort on the coaching staff. They already work together well. And so that experience will kind of build together, and I think Freeman will be okay because they'll have the support system in place with the staff.
It'll be very interesting what Brian Kelly does at LSU, because this is an opportunity perhaps to pull back the curtain on Brian Kelly as a coach, as a recruiter, because I kind of felt like Brian Kelly was almost the administrator that just makes sure everyone else is doing their jobs as far as recruiting, as far as contacts with recruits, relationships, getting schedules for guys to come on campus. And then Brian Kelly would come out and make his grand appearance and introduce himself and go into the parents' homes and be somewhat of a celebrity. Because let's face it, Brian Kelly coming into your living room, that's a celebrity walking in because you see him on TV every week. And so that was kind of his role. It's like, well, if you maintain a good relationship, eventually through this recruiting process, you're going to get a chance to meet the king. Brian Kelly himself will come into your living room and recruit you. Where now he goes to LSU, and do you think, Caleb, when he took that job, when he had the phone call and they said, "We want you to be the coach," and he said, "Yes, I'm coming," do you think he thought that his coordinators would be loyal, that they would? I mean, we didn't think right away Marcus Freeman would be the first name to pop up. But once you started seeing the reaction from players, from former players, from recruits, Marcus Freeman hits the home run and he checks a lot of the boxes. Now, the one box, of course, that we've talked about that's not being checked by Marcus Freeman is the experience as a prior head coach. But he checks it. But this is a different situation again. You want a prior head coach with experience if you have to rebuild a program, because you want to know what they can do with a program, and so you want to see what they've run before. In this case, who's the guy that can maintain and possibly even deliver a next step for Notre Dame? It's a totally different process, and I think that's why they got the right guy.
Yeah, it's, you know, Kelly probably expected. Now, Tommy Rees, that was always going to be a tough ask to pull him away from Notre Dame to LSU just because, well, he played at Notre Dame. He's very loyal to the university. And Freeman, he was at Cincinnati for a few years. Remember, Brian Kelly is able to hire him as defensive coordinator for this past season over LSU. LSU threw a lot of money at him, and Kelly was able to get him to be on the staff. I think Kelly expected, though, a lot of his assistants, and now this is not fully wrapped up. We've seen a lot of reports of assistants staying at Notre Dame. But I think Kelly expected, with having the resources, and resources mainly being money, of LSU, he'd be able to pull some of these guys away. That has not happened. I think that speaks to the volumes of how loyal these guys are to Notre Dame. And I think Notre Dame is a program under Kelly. I mean, he had a rebuild. He achieved that. He moved on. But the program itself has definitely made a lot of improvements in facilities. They modernized a lot of things. And the one thing that was not quite to the level that it was in the past was recruiting. And now we're already seeing the ability with Freeman to get to that level once again, to be a top five contender in recruiting classes year in, year out.
468-6262. Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Give us your thoughts on Marcus Freeman as the next coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Plenty more on this subject still coming up on the show. Coming up next, Comets had a game last night. They are struggling with an issue, and it starts with a C. We'll tell you what that is coming up after the break. Also, Mastodons, tough test tonight to open their Horizon League play. We'll tell you more about that. And how does the College Football Playoff Committee now view the Irish if the Irish are under Marcus Freeman? Does it help? Does it hurt? We'll talk about that subject as well coming up here on a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush. Thomas just scrambling around trying to find players to get on the ice after a COVID outbreak among the Comets. And you know, last year during what was considered the, quote, COVID year, the Comets went through the entire season, never had a positive COVID case. All of a sudden now they've got multiple players that are positive for COVID. It includes players and staff. And so they had to kind of round up some players to try to take the ice. They've been playing games with 9 defensemen and 7 forwards. Last night it caught up with them down in Indy. Comets lost 4-1 to the Indy Fuel. They'll be home Friday and Saturday against the expansion Iowa team coming in here to the Memorial Coliseum. So now that Marcus Freeman has been hired as the Notre Dame coach, of course, we heard talks about the fact that the College Football Playoff Committee can actually evaluate key injuries, guys that are already saying they're not going to play in postseason games because of the NFL draft, that the College Football Playoff Committee can evaluate a team based on what they expect to be the team that takes the field should they be allowed a spot in the College Football Playoff. That means if there's a coaching change, they can evaluate whether or not they favor the coach, don't favor the coach. They can say Notre Dame's not going to be as good under Marcus Freeman as they were under Brian Kelly. They could say Notre Dame might be better under Marcus Freeman because the transition's going to keep all the players there. There's continuity among the assistant coaches. So I guess the question is, how does the College Football Playoff Committee view Notre Dame now that we expect Marcus Freeman to officially be named as the coach? Last week, I do think Notre Dame took a ding, and maybe, Caleb, maybe you don't, that Oklahoma State deserved to leapfrog them. I don't think they did. I felt like Notre Dame should be at number 5 this week. They're at number 6. But depending on what happens this weekend, it's going to be an interesting weekend in college football. Where will Notre Dame fall? I mean, where will Notre Dame end up being by the time the final college football playoff rankings are given out? Will Notre Dame get a bump from this? Will they get a ding for this? What's going to be the result of Notre Dame now having a coach, hiring him quickly, and having some continuity with what they've done during the regular season?
Well, Gary Barta, the kind of the head of the College Football Playoff Committee, he admitted as much, in quotes, that he essentially dinged Notre Dame, like you said, due to their coaching situation at the time. Now, I will argue that Oklahoma State has more quality wins than Notre Dame because Notre Dame's resume is essentially they have the best loss in college football, but their best wins are, what, Wisconsin or Purdue. Now, the way they played to close the season shows you that it's a different football team than when they lost to Cincinnati and struggled the first few weeks of the season in September before things kind of had a turning point in the Virginia Tech game, and then they've kind of just been on a roll since then. So they were dinged. Now, I would argue Oklahoma State should be ranked ahead of Notre Dame at the current time. I do expect a lot of chaos this weekend. I really do. I think we'll see teams lose that you don't expect to lose. That's just kind of the nature of how things play out in college football, especially in these conference championship games where it's a neutral field, it's a toss-up. You know, both teams are obviously playing for a conference championship. Some teams are playing for potentially more in a college football playoff spot. I'm not sure how good Oklahoma State is. We know that Oklahoma was not really a great defensive team, and they had their struggles, the quarterback play all season long. And you look, they lost to Iowa State, a team that's kind of beaten a lot of the big-name Big 12 programs the past couple years. They beat Baylor earlier in the season by 10. That's about it. I mean, they really don't have a whole lot on the resume.
And you know what Oklahoma State is? Oklahoma State is the Alabama of the Big 12. Because Alabama, we keep questioning just how good are they because all they do is escape. They have close mm-hmm. wins against decent teams. That's what Oklahoma State has done. I mean, they beat Missouri State by 7. They beat Tulsa by 5. They beat Boise State by 1. beat Kansas State by 11, beat Baylor by 10, beat Texas by 8. Give me a blowout somewhere in here. Tell me there's a blowout. Iowa State beat Oklahoma State, and then that might have ticked them off. Almost said something. Oh, that might have ticked them off a little bit, because the next week they put a really good pasting on Kansas, 55-3. Okay, so they got their blowout.
A Kansas team who couldn't even beat Texas this year. Who Texas couldn't even beat.
It was a favor on the schedule, yeah. Oklahoma State over West Virginia, 24-3, probably the best defensive performance they had of the year. They did beat TCU 63-17, 23-0 over Texas Tech, but then beat Oklahoma by 4. And so, you know, I mean, you can compare the resumes, and I guess the question is, how much tougher are teams like a TCU? I mean, Texas was probably no better than North Carolina this year.
Oh, they're worse than North Carolina.
But the point is, Notre Dame had a big win over North Carolina, right? And Oklahoma beat Texas by 8. So, I mean, Oklahoma State beat Texas by 8. So, I just don't know what you see in the resume with Oklahoma State that makes them better than Notre Dame, especially if you want to consider how are they playing right now? Because I think Notre Dame's playing as good at number
as good
2,
as
maybe 3 in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that there's 2 teams playing better than Notre Dame right now. Georgia, I think so. Georgia's just had a terrific year. I think the Georgia-Alabama game is going to be really interesting because Alabama goes into that backs against the wall. They understand they can't not afford to lose. And so there's desperation for Alabama, who's accustomed to being in the college football playoff. I think it'll be really interesting. Will the pressure mount on Georgia?
Georgia hasn't really been tested a whole lot this year. And Alabama's, they have a poor running game. They have a great quarterback. Their defense is mediocre. But Georgia hasn't really been tested, like you said. And, you know, if Oklahoma State wins against Baylor, they're in. If Michigan wins against Iowa, they're in. Obviously, if Cincinnati wins, they're in. And if Georgia wins, they're in. I mean, I don't think it's going to play out, though.
The field is set if everything goes status quo, basically.
I don't think it's chalk. And one key for Notre Dame, and this is simple. It's so stupid, but it's simple. You have to announce a head coach sometime before they announce, you know, the college football playoff
standings. It's going to be tonight or tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think it will be.
I mean, we have 99.9% confidence that it is Marcus Freeman, and there's no reason to believe otherwise. It just hasn't become official because the university itself hasn't announced it.
And that's only because you need to show the committee that you have some sense of stability so that perceived ding that we talked about earlier cannot be used against Notre Dame as far as the college football playoff standings go.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Did have a texter, rather boastful, puffing out their chest. Apparently a Notre Dame fan that has a lot of confidence in the Irish next year. I don't know. All I will say before you read the text, Caleb, is you might want to check next year's schedule.
Yeah. At Ohio State, they also have Clemson. They play BYU in Vegas, at USC to end the season. And it should be a much improved USC team, not the hapless team that they've been.
Especially
since
by the end
Sam
of the year,
Darnold year
when they've had a year under Lincoln Riley. Yeah,
correct. And you know, maybe having either Caleb Williams or some other star quarterback come in.
And you
in.
Start with Ohio State on the road, you end with USC on the road.
Yeah, it's a
and
tough
it's not,
schedule.
No cakewalk in between. I mean, it's still a difficult schedule.
You lose once, though. This fan says, we're going to the national championship next year, book it. And I would say, let's see how they do against Ohio State in game one, and then we can kind of start the hype.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Timeout, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk to Kevin Bowen from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. A lot of things to talk about, including the Pacers, Colts. We'll catch up. Kevin Bowen next here on The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Go Dons tonight. They're at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum starting Horizon League play. They're taking on Wright State, a big one. Wright State has traditionally been one of the powers of the Horizon League over the last 2 or 3 years. They've got a terrific tandem in Tanner Holden and Grant Basile. And the Dons will have their hands full tonight. Should be a good game out at the Coliseum. If you can make it in person, get your ticket at the door. If you can't make it in person, you can listen to Justin Kenny and I with the call of Mastodons basketball right here tonight on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Well, it is time to welcome our guest, Kevin Bowen from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. He's joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. You know, I remember the days when Kevin Bowen was just a lowly old reporter down in Indianapolis. Now he's become a big host of a morning show. This week he's hit national TV on Hard Knocks. The guy is becoming such a big celebrity. I don't know how many more times we will be blessed with him joining our show, but he does right now. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Thank you for that, Brett. Yeah, I was like, boy, any chance of ever being on Hard Knocks again just went out the window after they lose. after it, you know, desperate times lead in with a little lowly morning show with Jake and I for their episode last week, and then they lose. I'm like, oh, there goes my 15 seconds of fame.
It's the Colts with that editorial control. No more Bowen.
right. Yeah, screw the competitive advantage. No more Kevin Bowen leading in. So this week they had NFL Network and, you know, Good Morning Football and all of that. And, you know, I'm sure they'll beat the Texans by 30 now.
Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Kevin, before we get into the Colts, and we've got plenty to talk about there, want to get your thoughts. Notre Dame decides to stay in-house, hire Marcus Freeman. And we were just talking about this earlier in the show. This is a unique situation for a power program to be hiring a coach when the power program is really at its peak, when it's been playing some of the best football and been getting some of the best rankings it has had in a long time. And I said, that's the reason you can't go outside and bring a guy in, because you could lose some of the talent that's already been recruited. You could lose some of the talent you've got on the field. You try to make it a smooth transition as possible. Marcus Freeman's the guy they picked, and it seems to be going over very well with players, with fans. What are your thoughts on Notre Dame choosing Marcus Freeman to be their next head coach?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Caleb about it. I'm a huge, huge fan. And by the way, full transparency, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan, so I just want to make sure I clarify that up front. But, you know, Brian Kelly did an incredible job. This five-year run that they're currently on, the consistency and putting away, you know, every opponent outside of the elite ones is something that no one should take for granted. So I want to acknowledge that. And honestly, the reason why Marcus Freeman, I think, is such a great fit is because of how stable of a ground Kelly is leaving the program on. Having said that, to beat the elite teams, I always felt like the missing ingredient for Notre Dame was just having more depth at a high, high level. I think back to that game against Clemson in the playoff a couple years ago. First quarter, back and forth. I want to say it was like 0-0, maybe 3-0. Julian Love gets hurt kind of into the first quarter, early in the second. And Notre Dame's got to throw another corner in there that just isn't at the level that Julian Love is. And sure enough, your depth gets tested, and boom, Trevor Lawrence takes advantage of that. And it's just moments like that where Alabama or Clemson, Ohio State, they're inserting, you know, guys that maybe don't have that big of a drop-off. And I think Marcus Freeman in just 1 year has shown, especially on the defensive side of the ball, he can recruit at an extraordinarily high level that is necessary to try and kind of raise the ceiling there. So I think that is what is really intriguing to me. I think he can be super relatable as well, and almost be a bit of a role model to guys that, you know, might be a little afraid of coming to Notre Dame. Like, you know, if you're a top 100 kid, Notre Dame can be a very intimidating sort of ordeal academically, socially. You know, is South Bend the place I want to spend, you know, 3 or 4 years, all of that? And I just think Marcus Freeman can have an ability to be a little bit more relatable on that front and ultimately create a deeper roster.
We want to talk about the Colts with you, Kevin. And it's got it to a point where it reminds me of when I went and saw the movie Titanic, because I knew eventually the ship was going to sink. I just wanted to see how they depict it in movie form. And it's kind of the same thing for the Colts. They play these good teams. They come out, they play well, they get everybody into it, and then all of a sudden they make mistakes or things fall apart in the second half. Another tough loss, a team that they could have beaten, should have beaten perhaps, and they let it slip away. What happened?
To me, I think you got to start with the turnovers. You know, when you play a team like Tom Brady and you have four real turnovers, and I mean, hell, Rocky Sheen dropped an interception early in that game that we probably forget about as well. That's what it boils down to. Sure, the usage of Jonathan Taylor, to me, was a mistake. I actually thought the run game saw some production in the second quarter. I don't think we're talking about that enough. When you had that great second quarter, certainly Carson Wentz threw the football at a really high level. But let's not forget that Jonathan Taylor averaged 5 yards per carry in that second quarter. And I think just creeping into a little bit more balance helped you out there. And then also, and I think this is probably a little bit of a bigger, you know, bigger picture question, Brett, but like, I just think the inability to put teams away oftentimes comes with, sorry about that truck going by. I'm trying to enjoy this nice weather with my daughter outside. I think the inability of not having a potent pass rush is a big thing that we've seen, and not, you know, finishing off these big leads. I just don't think the Colts are very dynamic when it comes to getting after the quarterback. You know, I obviously in this market, you kind of take for granted probably 93 and 98 getting after the quarterback. A couple decades ago now. But I think those are some of the reasons why. Again, bigger picture, and then obviously when in terms of Sunday, I would say specifically it was more of just the turnovers by Eric Fisher on the strip sack, the Nyheim Hines muff punt. Those are the two that really stand out to me.
Why can't the Colts cover tight ends?
Oh, boy. That's a great, great question. Especially down the middle of the field, you know, down the seam. I mean, I get it schematically. That is kind of a susceptible area. You know, it's funny, Brett. I think when we talked before the Buffalo game, I said that my biggest worry in that one was Andrew Sendejo and George Odom. I thought that safety duo, that backup safety duo, would finally get exposed. They did not. They actually played, I think, pretty well, especially Odom, in that game. But I thought they got exposed against Tom Brady. I thought Brady looked at that and realized, okay, you know, they've got 9 of 11 starters in the lineup. Where do they not have the 2 defensive starters? Oh, it's at safety? Boom, here comes Gronk down the middle all day long. It has been a constant issue. It's not just Gronk that has, you know, torn them up. So did a great job on Mike Evans and Leonard Fournette, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, definitely not Leonard Fournette. And that's the other thing, like, you know, when you see 38 points allowed, Brett, like, that's a jarring number. I don't think the defense played that poorly, but the fact that you allowed Fournette over 5 yards per carry, you allowed Gronk to have, you know, easily the best game he's had all season, and then that final drive, it was just so easy for him. Brady's 5 of 5. Fournette's ripping off big runs. That really, you know, you got a moment in your own stadium. You know, Brady hadn't been sharp all day long, and just, I don't even think they encountered a third down on that drive at all.
Well, that's the, you talk about the pressure on the quarterback, and that's been an issue all year. And, you know, Brady's one of those guys where you almost have to apply the pressure without bringing the blitz, and the front four just not getting the job done. And I don't know if that's DeForest Buckner with the pressure up the middle or the push up the middle, if it's supposed to be, you know, Kwadwo or Kamoko Touré. I don't know who we point at, but somehow they've got to put pressure on the quarterback. They've got to at least displace him, not let him be comfortable standing and planting that back foot and looking around. And, you know, when you let Tom Brady do that, he will pick you apart. It's very tough to cover guys tight enough that Tom Brady can't find an opening to get a ball completed, especially when Gronk's got 5 yards of space around him. It just tough. And I think about tight ends, and I think, boy, they got the Raiders coming up, and Waller is one of the tough tight ends to cover anyway. And they've got the Raiders coming up in what might be a must-win game. I mean, the Colts really, when you look at their schedule, 5 games left, I look at it, Kevin, based on everybody else's schedule with the teams that are sitting around 500 or just above, I think the Colts have to consider a 4-1 record to put them into a position to make the playoffs. I don't know if 3-2 does it at this point.
You know, it's funny you say that. I would have agreed wholeheartedly with that earlier in the week. I actually looked into it a little bit more and crunched some numbers. 4-1 to me, as long as, especially if that one loss to Arizona, you know, you really want to win your AFC games. You mentioned the Raiders game. The New England game is also very big. Both of those are at home. If you win those two and go 4-1, I'd be stunned if you didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have a favorable tiebreaker situation if they go 3-2 and they get the right wins. Again, New England, Las Vegas. New England coming up in a couple Saturdays. Las Vegas, I believe, is January 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium. Just massive. If you can go 3-2 and win those or even split those, I think they actually have a little bit better chance than I originally would have thought. And the key thing it comes down to is conference record. And for those of you that might be confused after I explain this, I wrote an article on 107.5thefan.com, so it'll be a little bit easier to follow, I think, in written format. But basically it's this. In the wild card race, it goes head-to-head tiebreaker and then conference record. Well, the Colts don't play the AFC West this year. They don't play the AFC North. So they don't have a lot of those matchups head-to-head with those two divisions that have so many teams in the wild card race. The Colts play the AFC South, obviously, and the AFC East. So they get the benefit of Jacksonville twice, Houston twice, the Jets and the Dolphins. And that second tiebreaker, again, not head-to-head, the second tiebreaker is conference record. And right now, if you look at the eight teams in the wild card mix, the Colts are 5-3 in the AFC. That's the second best mark of any team competing for a wild card spot. And they are benefiting from, again, having that easier schedule and doing a nice job with it against the AFC team. So, you know, when I look at it like that, Brett, and think, all right, if they can get to 9-8, and you look at AFC records and you start comparing them, that could come into play. So to be safe, yes, four out of your last five, but, you know, three out of your last five, and if those wins, you know, happen to be New England or the Raiders or split those, I still think they got a shot.
The when you're talking about the Colts going down to Houston this week, is there anything the Colts really need to be concerned about other than a letdown?
I mean, Houston stinks, Brett. They are so bad. Offensively, they're god-awful. I mean, I know Tyrod Taylor is better than Davis Mills, but that offensive line is just in shambles. I think they're dead last in the league in rushing. I want to say they're second to last in passing. And in particular, there's some dysfunction, like non-Deshaun Watson. I mean, they have suspended three defensive players, three prominent defensive players in the last couple of weeks. Like, I don't know. I just don't feel like you see that very often in the NFL. So it's a 9-point spread, and honestly, I think that's too small. I really think the Colts are going to roll. I don't, you know, if there's one thing Frank Reich has done a really nice job of in his tenure, they outside of at Jacksonville, they really don't lose these games. And so I'm not. When you're 6-6 and you need help and you just lost, I don't believe in a trap game. So I think the Colts will take care of business.
Harry Willis going to be back?
Yes, and that's the other thing. I guess I should say, I assume he will be back. He practiced today. I think as long as he checks out tomorrow, he should be good to go. They had all 53 guys practice today, Brett. And Houston, I haven't seen their injury report yet. It probably just came out, actually, as we're talking. But they had four guys miss practice yesterday due to illness. So they're battling a little bit of a bug. And again, the Colts are about as healthy as you can be for early December. And getting Kari Willis back, I think, is huge. So, you know, Tyrod Taylor, to me, is a fine backup and all of that. But still, they just it's a roster, Brett, where I don't do this very often in the NFL, but at times I'm like, wait, who are these guys? And I know they beat Tennessee a few weeks ago. Tennessee put the ball on the ground four times, and they threw four interceptions. You give a team in the NFL eight turnover plays, you deserve to lose the game. I know the Colts turned it over last week. I don't see them doing it for a second week in a row.
By the way, before I let you go, and I only have another minute or so, how bad is it in Tennessee? I mean, I can't see the Colts catching the Titans in any way, shape, or form, but I don't know. I mean, the Titans have some troubles right now.
You know, it's funny you say that, Brett. About 3 o'clock on Sunday when the Colts are leading and Tennessee's losing, I'm thinking to myself, oh, boy, is this division race back on? Then the Colts, you know, obviously blew it. And the magic number is just 3 games. So that's combined Colts losses, Titans wins to clinch the division. It's bad. They need a bye week really bad, and they have their bye week right now. But I think you got to look at their schedule. Their schedule, I believe, sucks. Houston, Jacksonville, Miami, Pittsburgh. I want to say San Francisco is the only better than 500 team they play the rest of the way. So I still think they get in. But, I mean, if you're right now, with how many injuries they've had, I mean, if you're an AFC team, that's the team you want to see in round one.
Kevin, always enjoy having you jump on. Have a great weekend. We'll hope to talk to you next week.
Yep, thanks, Brett. Appreciate it.
Kevin Bowen joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5-107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. Still coming up at the show in our next hour, we'll talk to Dylan Sin about the Marcus Freeman hire at Notre Dame. We also have Dute. He's in for Tommy Shegler from Parkview Sports Medicine. He'll join us coming up just after 5:30. Busy, busy Thursday here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.